Welcome into the Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. It's Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. I know a lot of us are cold. A lot of us are buried under snow. So we're going to talk a little golf and try to send some warm thoughts your way via the Genesis Invitational in Los Angeles. Rick Gamet is going to join us coming up in just a few minutes from RickRungood.com. A loaded field. We've got most of the top players in the world on hand and going to have fun talking some golf, some DFS, some one and done, some wagering with Rick Gamet. Also, do want your questions, thoughts, ideas for our next round of drafts, as we're going to have plenty of guests coming up that we'll do some drafts with. Recently, we did a draft of actors and actresses, their filmographies. That was with Jake Woodford. Drew Silva joined me for a draft of beverages, non-alcoholic beverages. That led to a little bit of controversy on social media. Jim Hayes is going to be with us tomorrow. The last time Jim was on, we did a draft of fast food restaurants. So need your ideas. Tweet me at C-H-R-A-B-E, C-H-R-A-B-E. Don't forget, subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, hit subscribe, leave a review, take a screenshot, and tweet that to me at C-H-R-A-B-E. Visit ScoopsWithDannyMac.com for everything every day from yours truly, from Dan, from Bernie, from Martin Kilcoin. The whole gang is at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. All right, let's welcome Rick Gamet into the show as we talk a little bit of golf before the Genesis Invitational. The website is RickRungood.com. You can also hear Rick on the CBS First Cut podcast. Rick, we talk a lot about relatability. Is there a silver lining to Nate Lashley that he is more relatable now? He is a million times more relatable, maybe the most current relatable player on the PGA Tour after what he did and the unfortunate issues that he had coming down the stretch on Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. Four putting on whatever that was, 16, is very relatable. Losing probably like $500,000 in the process, that's not as relatable in terms of the prize money, but I'll also give you an honorable mention. The opening tee shot from Francesco Molinari on Saturday at Pebble Beach was a cold top that he hit 70 yards. I do that all the time, Chris. That was very relatable.
That was pretty good. The only way that Molinari could have been more relatable would have been if he had pegged up a second ball and if right. Lashley had just picked up and walked off the green without finishing.
It's actually true. I probably don't get to four putts because I would have picked it up well before that. And I would have had, if I was Molinari, my hand in my pocket and a second ball reloaded instantly.
Rick Gamet is with us, RickRungood.com. Daniel Berger, man, we've talked about him, and boy, was he great down the stretch. He had the issue on 18 on Saturday, but he was just steady, man. Made some big putts, was just throwing darts. He actually could have been, you know, a couple of shots better if he had made a couple more makeable putts, but he was just unbelievable, man, to watch him in those conditions, you know, essentially front running for most of the tournament after he got off, or for most of Sunday after he got off to the hot start. I was incredibly impressed. How about you, Rick?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, objectively, however you want to slice it, however you want to look at it, Daniel Berger played the best golf last week. Now, I know that's weird to say because he won, but there are a lot of times the guy that objectively plays the best golf does not win on the PGA Tour. And what I mean by that is, you know, Berger, even over the first 2 days, he got the wrong end of the draw. You know, the order that he had to play Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill, you know, the scoring average was like two shots against him. So he got the wrong end of the draw. He was still able to get through that. He played awesome on Saturday outside of that double that he made on 18. And then he was just in control on Sunday and coming down the stretch to put an exclamation point on that event by making eagle on 18 and even just crushing everybody else's even small chances of catching him or getting into a playoff was the icing on the cake. He was by far the best player in the field last week.
You can head to RickRungood.com. And speaking of the field, Rick, if last week was maybe a bit of a disappointment, especially with some guys, W. Dean, because it was not the traditional Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This week, the Genesis Invitational is absolutely stacked. Your first impressions of the field that we'll see this week at Riviera?
Absolutely loaded. Yeah, only two guys currently ranked inside the world's top 10 are not playing. That's Webb Simpson and Tyrrell Hatton. Basically, everybody else from 1 to, I don't know, 30 is here. Dustin Johnson's going to make his return after WDing last week, so we have not seen him since Saudi Arabia. Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau, every big name is in this field, and Riviera is just an unbelievable host course. It is challenging. It is fair. There are risk-reward holes. There are very easy holes. There are very difficult holes. I mean, this is really, I overuse, my wife tells me all the time, Chris, I overuse the word iconic. Riviera is iconic. I'm stoked for this week.
You know, I was thinking about something that you mentioned last week, and that was with football ending, the Super Bowl was a couple of weeks ago. Maybe we've got some more folks jumping into the golf waters. Maybe some of the football folks are allocating some of their time and capital to golf DFS. With a loaded field like this and a lot of public quote-unquote names, I guess just about Tiger is the only name that we're missing from a public standpoint. Yeah. Do you feel you and, you know, folks at rickrungood.com using your data have any advantage based on that? Seems like a strange question, but this could be a loaded field in terms of the number of people that are playing golf DFS and PGA DFS this week.
For sure. There's going to be a lot of casual entries. I'm kind of already seeing that. I mean, you know, just the questions being asked on some of the YouTube videos that I put out, like I can kind of get a feel for the type of player that is in a contest this week.
And it's like, Rick, what are you wearing?
Right. Exactly. I'm like, oh, this is just a t-shirt. Like it's been in my closet for a while. But no, you're right. And I think that the ability, so the thing that's a bit paralyzing for people is there's too many names. There's no natural starting point. There's no natural second man in. All of these guys are playing well. A lot of them have really great course history. So being able to split hairs, whether it is via data, a data set, a projection, something like that, or, you know, hey, my gut says this, like you're going to have to make very difficult decisions this week, which I think only helps the more experienced player or the more thoughtful player. Maybe experience isn't the right word. The more thoughtful player probably does better this week.
RickRungood.com is the website. Check out the cheat sheet, and that's where you can see the top of the board and the projected ownership. And yeah, you're right, man. Like looking at the projected ownership right now on the cheat sheet, we have got what?
Yeah, everybody's within 5%.
I'm looking at how many guys we've got double digits. It's how many guys we've got over 15%. This has got to be for a non-major and a non-players championship, a non-playoff event. How do I phrase this? The event with the most guys that are the highest owned, like how often do you have, you know, a dozen guys that are 15 or 14 or more percent owned projected?
Yeah, it's rare. It speaks to the strength of this field. It speaks to the way that they are priced, because that leads to a lot of the projected ownership. You know, if there was an obvious value, that person, you know, that golfer would have a huge projected ownership, but the pricing is pretty efficient this week and the field is stacked. So you're seeing a lot of just ownership being spread out amongst everyone, which is kind of a good thing. So you can almost just go with the guy that you think is going to do better, which sounds a lot easier than it really ends up being, Chris. But yeah, I mean, the top of the board is absolutely stacked, and it's really hard to find anything wrong with any of these guys.
Yeah, and if you see at rickrungood.com, Daniel Berger only projected to be owned by 0.03%, that's because he withdrew. You have to go a little bit farther down to start seeing some of that green and starting to see some guys who might be value. So let's talk about the top of the board as it pertains to Dustin Johnson, JT, Rory, Rahm, Bryson, Schauffele, Koepka, Cantlay, Morikawa, Finau, Spieth. Yeah. It's just goes on and on. Where are you starting and what stands out about the guys at the top in a field that's hard to find value, Rick? How do we start to navigate the big boys?
Yeah, so here's where I think if you wanted to build lineups optimally, I think you'd have to go with John Rahm. And the reason that I say that is you look at the betting odds. Dustin Johnson is 5.5 to 1 to win this golf tournament. The next shortest odds are John Rahm. He's 12 to 1, but he's not being priced like that on DraftKings. He's the fourth most expensive player on DraftKings, and he's $900 cheaper than Dustin Johnson. So you're getting a built-in $900 value, or probably not 900, but maybe a $600 value from the way that John Rahm should be priced. And like I said before, we're kind of splitting hairs on all of these guys. Is John Rahm half as likely to win this golf tournament as Dustin Johnson? No, but that's kind of the way that he's being priced. So from a DFS standpoint, when you talk about straight value, straight salary cap, John Rahm is probably the guy. And if you want to talk about value in the betting market, the one that stood out to me, Chris, is Bryson DeChambeau. You can get him at 16 to 1. You can get him at 17 to 1 in some places. He is he's a prolific winner on the PGA Tour. He's won twice since the restart, one of them being a major championship. He is longer than Xander Schauffele, who doesn't win as much as he should. He's much longer than Rory McIlroy, who hasn't won in over a year. That, to me, you know, we talk about value in different ways, is a really good outright bet value.
You know, for all the talk about Bryson and how damn far he's hitting and will continue to hit the ball, is he getting enough credit for how good of a putter he's been consistently throughout his career, Rick, and the fact that he's also getting better, it seems, at that?
Yeah, so he's like a top, 10 putter on the PGA Tour. Like, yeah. He's phenomenal.
And no one talks about
the greens. Yeah, because it's a lot more fun to talk about the bombs and, and the transformation.
Ask Nate Lashley.
Seriously. The biggest thing that I've taken away from Bryson's gain of distance and being much better off the tee is that he did not lose anywhere else. That's shocking. Usually when a guy dedicates a lot of time to one thing, they get worse in other aspects. Well, Bryson was already pretty good at everything, and then he just added an absolute weapon off the tee that we don't shut up about. So no, Chris, you're right. His short game, especially the putter, is phenomenal. One of the best on the PGA Tour. And you're going to have to be able to roll it. These are those kind of awkward Poana greens at Riviera that can cause some issues. So you're going to need to be able to putt well.
Yeah, and if you look at his strokes gained putting, he's been really, really good. Like last year, he was in the top 10, and you have to figure mm-hmm. that with hitting it farther, he's just got shorter and more manageable putts. So in terms right. of scoring and in terms of cashing in, I think it's interesting sometimes when a narrative like we talk about can shift our focus, and in this case, it shifts our focus away from a guy's strength. I was trying to think of another guy who maybe because of a narrative, because of something he does well, we don't give him enough credit for something else that he does really well.
Well, I was thinking about Tony Finau. We talk a lot about the failures, but we don't realize how good he is.
Yeah,
like
sure.
He's legitimately awesome. I mean, and actually for this week as well, being $9,300 on DraftKings, I think you can get him around 22, 25 to one, depending on where you are looking. I know he doesn't win, but the reason that he hasn't won on Sundays is not necessarily because he's melted down. He's hit a couple of awkward shots, but he usually plays better than the field average on Sunday. Usually what happens to him is someone shoots a 64 and steals the tournament from him. We've seen that more often than Tony Finau melting down. Now, Riviera, 10th most difficult course on the PGA Tour last year. If Tony Finau's in contention and he shoots a 69 or a 70 like Adam Scott did last year on Sunday, he might win this golf tournament. I don't want to have any bold takes of Tony Finau going to win this week, but if he's going to win, it's going to be at a spot like this where you don't need to shoot a 63 on a Sunday.
Yeah, if his scoring average was down a little bit the first three rounds and then maybe popped a little bit, was a little bit different on Sunday, even if he was arriving at the same spot, if he was coming from like 20th and then ending up like third or fourth, we'd right. talk about him being on the verge rather than him right. being collapsing.
Yeah, it's a perception reality argument that we have all the time. Look at Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth was the 54-hole leader 2 weeks in a row, didn't win either, but he had two top fives. If you told me a month ago Jordan Spieth would have back-to-back top five finishes, Chris, I'd be foaming at the mouth. I'd be like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. People are going to argue that Jordan Spieth has been a letdown in the last 2 weeks. So it's all about perception versus reality.
The other guy that I think maybe falls into the same category, but maybe the inverse of Bryson is Brooks Koepka, right? And I was a little surprised to see his ownership projection at rickrungood.com. Yeah. That's called a tease. You can head to the website and look at it. And I feel like Brooks, a lot of the numbers would suggest he hasn't putted as well as not only he could, but he typically does. And especially last year down the stretch, Rick, when he was kind of grinding and would kind of show up maybe out of nowhere, especially if you had him in DFS lineups on Saturday or Sunday, you'd kind of forget to pay attention. He'd sneak in, make the cut, then play great. Like, he wasn't even putting well at all down the stretch last year during the, beginning of the restart. And I feel like, maybe as much as you can buy low on a guy that's priced like Brooks, maybe there's a little opportunity there. Probably not for long, because I imagine he's going to continue to play well.
Probably not for long. This week's kind of interesting because, and I have him, much lower owned, at least projected, than some of his peers here. And there's a couple of reasons for that. People don't like to play the guy after he won. Golf is the only sport in the world we penalize the guy who is the best golfer in the world the last time he played. That's what we're talking about.
Have you ever seen if there's actually any correlation to back that up, or is that just, again, recency bias? Because in the NFL, it's always, the narrative, the team that wins the Super Bowl is the team that's been hot. They're the team that's playing the best.
There really is no data to back this up. The issue with it is golf tournaments are hard to win in general. So of course, like, guys don't go back to back because golf tournaments are hard to win. And you have like a 5% chance at, if you're a stud, a 5% chance of winning any golf tournament. To do it back to back starts is nearly impossible. So it just doesn't happen in general. It's not because he was playing so well last week, he can't do it again. And then for Brooks, I mean, he's smack dab in the middle of Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, who are just two guys that have become, DFS darlings, and they're both in the $9,000 range. Normally you'd have to pay much more for them, and he's kind of the middleman there. So that's why I think that he comes in a bit overlooked. And don't you know it, Brooks just loves being the overlooked golfer.
Yeah, he does. I think he embraces that role. Rick Gaiman is with us. RickRungood.com is the website. So if we like John Rahm and we like Bryson, especially Bryson on the betting card, how about as we make our way down, Rick, and if the top of the field is as stacked as it is, like this week at the Genesis Invitational, I have to imagine you're licking your chops at some of the guys further down, some value plays and some guys you think that could help us differentiate our lineup a bit and get an edge on the field.
Yeah, so there's, when we get fields this strong, usually a top tier player wins that event. So we have got to calibrate our expectations and say, okay, some of these guys further down the board, what are we asking them to do? Maybe finish top 10, maybe finish top 20, depending on what their pricing is. And I'm going pretty far down. I'm fairly comfortable with someone like a Taylor Gooch. He's $7,200 on DraftKings. He has played at Riviera twice. He has gone 20th in 2018 and 10th in 2020. That was last year. He gained strokes in all four major categories, which is always a good thing for me because it means you have a solid floor. You're not reliant on just one aspect of your game. And he had a top five earlier this year at the CJ Cup. That is another event that has an absolutely stacked field. So that to me, Chris, checks off all three boxes. I'm very comfortable to roll out Taylor Gooch. And then even further down, and I'm going pretty far down here, Doc Redman is hanging at $6,600. And let's be real, it has been a terrible start to 2021 for Doc. He will tell you that himself. He had his eyes set on coming out of the gates hot, getting himself into some WGCs, solidifying his spots in some of these bigger events. And it hasn't happened. And it's all been the putter. He has been historically bad with the putter, which is something that you can usually turn around. And here's a little tidbit. Last time Doc Redman played Riviera, he was winning the U.S. Amateur there. I think it was 4 years ago. Him and Doug Gim went 1-2. So he's got plenty of good vibes at the Riv.
As you were saying that, Rick, I was thinking about filling out DFS lineups, and whether it's golf or any sport, you pick the big guys, and especially if you're a casual player, you pick some big names, and you're often left with $6,300, $6,200, $6,500, and you just kind of pick. And you just kind of pick a guy, maybe whose name you know, maybe you pick a guy who some of the numbers that they show you, and we won't get started on that, on whatever platform you're using displays. For someone who, like you said, it can be a little overwhelming to look at all the names. If you were just going to give them one or two bits of advice, like the couple of things you should think of to try to make the most out of that bottom roster spot, even if the person has essentially no shot of winning the tournament, how can you optimize that spot to score points, to try to make the cut, to try to add some value to your lineup, regardless of your skill level?
Yeah. So, find something is what I would tell you. Do instead of the full dart throw, yeah, find something they do well. Find whether it is they're playing better than their peers coming in. Maybe they have a bit of course history. I am a bit partial to recent form. You know, the numbers dictate that usually if you're playing well and you go to a place that you necessarily haven't played well in the past, you can kind of overcome that a little bit, as opposed to the opposite, which is you've played well here at this course, but you're playing really bad right now. It's hard to flip that switch. But I will say this for this week. You know, Riviera is a pretty consistent, steady course. The course results year over year. It's why we've seen Bubba Watson win three times. It's why we've seen Adam Scott win twice. They're pretty consistent year over year. So if you are stuck down here and you're staring at like a Patrick Rogers who has missed four cuts in a row, but he's played here four times and he's finished between 15th and 30th in each of those four times, like that would be the one thing that I could hang my hat on to say, okay, maybe it's Patrick Rogers to fill out my final spot.
Yeah, like Doc Redman, for instance, has never been the greatest around the green player or right. putter, but he's like historically bad this year over the course of his PGA Tour career. And you would just have to imagine that he's not going to be outside the top 200 in strokes gained in both those categories. And he's played, you know, four or five tournaments already. Like, you have to imagine that's maybe something you could hang your hat on. Like, that's going to regress a little bit to the back towards the mean at some point, right?
Yeah. Most guys, especially in putting, they get back to their baseline. And we have enough rounds on Doc to know he's not the 230th
yeah.
best putter. You're right. Yeah. Or like slightly below. And if like he has a good week, that's, you know, he gains a little bit. But exactly right. Long term, we would expect him to get back to his average. And if he does that, it's like a shot and a half a round with how bad he's putting right now.
So, Rick, finally, let me ask you about one and done, because last week we talked about having a not so loaded field to choose from. This week we've got the opposite. Does the strategy change at all? Do you maybe lean towards one of the big boys because you think there will be a greater distribution, a greater scatter plot in terms of picks? Or, you know, does your approach change given the field this week of the Genesis?
So generally speaking, a lot of the win equity is at the top of this board. When you know, this isn't four guaranteed rounds, but it's a smaller field. A lot more of the guys make the cut. It's very deep. So you usually get a star who wins in an event like this. So I think the top 12-ish guys, that's where you want to live from. I'm actually starting to think like Rory McIlroy is kind of interesting. You know, I think we're at the point now where the tour is so deep. You don't have to play Rory at a major championship. You can play Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Bryson, Xander, Cantlay, Rob. I mean, there's just so many names. I've run out of majors already. I don't need to play Rory McIlroy at a major while everyone else plays him at a major. This is still an event that gets $1.6 million to first. It's a smaller field. He's had good success here in the past. He hasn't won it yet. So like that's what I'm trying to do, Chris, is be a little bit different than everybody else. Deploy my studs at the really big prize pool events and take my chances.
Rick Gaiman, go to rickrungood.com. Love the showdown tool over the course of a tournament where you can look at the strokes gain data. And hey, we'll have ShotLink on the one course for all four rounds this weekend. That will be an absolute treat. And again, you can check Rick out at the CBS First Cut podcast. You can follow him on Twitter as well at rickrungood. We gave away a handful of month-long subscriptions last week, so keep following along on Twitter and you can join the fun if you haven't already at rickrungood.com. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy a loaded field and hopefully no four putts for any of us this weekend.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, Chris.